Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, where we're already having far too much fun. Anyway, every week we get to, I get to be supported by some wonderful people from the EV Cafe, first of all, and this week, no exception, that today's Mr. and Mrs. actually is me and Saz, which is not my missus, because Sam will beat me up, but anyway, moving swiftly along, we do get to talk to some amazing people, and this is an EV Cafe first. Yes, it is. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first ever repeat that we've had, and it's not a repeat as such, it's a before and an after, and this is the after, because we get to talk to entrepreneur, sort of innovator, pioneer, collaborator, and adventurer. Yes, Chris and Julie Ramsey. Welcome to you both.
Hey, how's it going?
Thank you for having us on.
Well, you know, apparently you did something pretty clever, so we thought we'd probably better have you back. So for background, everybody, we had Chris and Julie on back, so you can look back to March the 15th. And by that point, I think you were already embarking on your adventure. But listen, let's give a quick summary so people can just soak in the kind of people that we are talking to. Check this out.
Yes.
So Chris has been a world record holder since 2015. Chris, isn't that right? You you cycled 180 miles?
2018.
Oh, 2018. No, you're right. Yes. Yes. No, 2018.
That's why I have Julie around. She corrects me all the time.
So, world record holder since 2018, having driven 180 miles on an electric bike. You also, in 2017, I think, drove the Mongol Rally 10,000 miles. A Nissan Leaf. Oh.
Yes.
And I think, was this the first time that Julie was co-pilot on an extensive journey?
It was indeed. That was the first time. So that was 10,000 miles in 56 days. The car had about a 90-mile range. And we drove pretty, London to essentially Mongolia, but it was like Siberia was the finishing point. So it was insane. And first time Julie joined me.
So the most important question here is, are you trying to bust electric myths, or is it the myth that you can't drive any kind of distance at all with your wife?
I know, it's a bit of both, isn't it, really? Because these are probably the two most common questions we get asked all the time. Yeah, but I
was going to say, don't ask those questions. They're the questions we don't need to ask, because we've asked that.
Well, I just thought we'd get them out of the way early on.
Yeah.
It's definitely busting the myths about electric vehicles and charging infrastructure and the capabilities. It's literally giving people practical demonstrations where they can go, actually, you see that information you're sharing with me just now? That's not really true, because look at this demonstration, look at that demonstration, look at that demonstration of practical everyday driving. So,
and it's a true test of a relationship as well.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, you'll be asked on to Oprah for marriage kind of guidance, because, you know, the marriage can survive that, can survive anything, let me tell you. But
when we joke all the time, it says if we become unemployed at the end of this, we'll become marriage counsellors, because if anyone can give advice, it'll be us.
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll get into one or two of those tougher moments later on today, but I mean, we're going to explore this whole journey that you guys have just been on. Of course, that is the reason you set us up to be excited about the rally going forward. But now we get to talk about it and get to really get under the skin of what you did for what must have been about 9 months in a car. So kick us off. Remind us when the dream began, because I was talking to you in 2019, I think, I'm sure, about this, when I was at a large lease company and we were trying to get some cash to help kickstart things. Where did it all begin?
It began literally after the Mongol Rally. So I mean, people think that we do this and we have like successful adventuring careers. We don't. I mean, back in 2017, I resigned from my work. Julie took a sabbatical from work, and I put everything from my redundancy into completing the Monga Rally. And then when we came back from the Monga Rally, Julie went back to her work. I should have been looking for a job. Instead, I was thinking, this is what I want to do. This is, people engage with this. This gives the world practical demonstrations. I want to continue doing this. So I was researching the idea of another adventure, and looking on our giant wall, on our bedroom wall, a giant map on our bedroom wall, I came up with the idea of Pole to Pole and broke the news to Julie.
I kind of went in one ear and out the other at the time. I was like, yeah, okay, let's see. Let's see. Yet, he's not short of ideas, this individual, and crazy ones too. So, but it took 6 years in the making, isn't it, before the idea became born to actual execution. So, it took a while to get off the ground, that's for sure.
Something that's so interesting about what you've achieved here is, for those who don't know and who haven't yet Googled it whilst listening, this isn't just somebody that's driven from pole to pole. This is the first time it's been done at all in a vehicle, but this is an electric vehicle. And I love to see the world through a youth's eyes, not my youth, my daughter. So I said to her, did you know what's happening? Our friends are doing this thing and look how cool they are. And I showed her all the pictures of you guys and all the videos. And our favorite one, I must say, is when Chris was pretty much slumped against the rear wheel of this adapted Nissan. You had your hand like that over your eyes, you know, on your brow, and Julie's just comforting you. And all she said was, they seem like really cool people. So it wasn't about husband and wife. It was just you guys being super. But what she couldn't get around was the geography of it. She's like, hang on, how? There's all sorts of oceans and mountains and ice caps in the way. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And they did it all in a car. Oh, they must have gone on a boat at one point. And I'm like, I don't think they did. What I would say, though, is, wow, your brain works in such a different way to other people who are listening. You spent all of your redundancy money on doing another crazy thing. I mean, that, Julie, over to you, as a very balanced set, as I'm sure you are. What was your initial reaction when you knew that he was going to do that?
As in the pole to pole, when he first told me about it.
When he spent all of the money on doing a rally.
Oh, wow. I think Chris is so passionate about electric vehicles, and his passion has rubbed off into me, and I am also really passionate. So I love adventure, I love traveling, and I feel we have to encourage people to adopt electric vehicles. It's a cleaner solution, cleaner mobility. There's so many benefits. There's problems within our world. We need to do something. And I just felt, look, if we want to make a change in this world, then we need to do something drastic. And hey, if Chris can pull it off like he did with the Monga Rally, because I'll be honest, I had doubts with the Monga Rally would even do that. So he proved me wrong. And I think, even though as ludicrous and as crazy it is, I think if you don't give something a go in life, you'll never know. So credit to Chris for persevering and having the boldness and the tenacity to have such a big ambition and big idea, because, you know, he's done it. He is the brainchild of this expedition.
And you're certainly the backbone behind the scenes, the catalyst that makes it happen,
absolutely.
The support, the sounding board, the listening ear. You're the champions together, definitely.
The rationale when sometimes I have an idea and she's like, yeah, maybe you should rethink that, or have, you know, go back to the drawing board on that section, or have you really thought about this? She's really good at making me question the different ideas or different avenues I'm thinking of going down the route of. So she's really good. I mean, she's just as crucial to everything that I've done as me going out there and doing it. I've just sat my bum on a car seat and driven a long distance. You know, there's always people behind you and there beside you that keeps you going and motivated. And that's always been Julie for me.
There was a few ultimatums, though, wasn't there?
Oh, tell us about the ultimatums.
You know, there's a few ultimatums because, you know, it took such a long time to get off the ground, and there were so many rejections, wasn't there, one after the other, and it was constant. So obviously you get to a point where you're like, well, you know, should we give up on this, or, you know, get a real job and earn more, start, you know, earning a proper salary and all those kind of questions, you know. So, you know, there was a few ultimatums where it says, look, you've got, you know, another 6 months to have a go at this. And other than that, let's just park it because, you know, I think you've really pushed it as far as you can.
can we go into that? Because, I mean, look, you spoke about 6 years, Chris, you know, in the sort of making. And Julie, you talked about perseverance, resilience, all those kinds of things. And I know what it's like, right? So if as the EV Cafe, we're trying to get a show off the ground in the sense of, you know, turn up at Everything Electric, or, you know, we're hoping that we'll go to Carfest this year and kind of celebrate stuff. If we do, by the way, you got to come. Anyway, that's an aside. But these things are frustrating. And when you get, so just in the last couple of days, like very real, that you've had a couple of people say, it's a really good idea, but no. We can't. And I know of two examples where you and I approached two different companies at different times, and both we ended up in a rejection, you know, to say no. And we were after sizable chunks of money, and it was going to make a real difference to the overall thing. Talk to me about the resilience required and the perseverance required to get to that point, but also, Julie, how you in particular kind of balance the motivation plus the ultimatum of, you know, because that's testing in any relationship for you both. Both Chris, as you're out there trying to get the money, but Julie, as you're out there trying to get the money, you know, in a different way.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that.
If you look at that, I mean, it's a good point. And when I talk about people being behind me and making these things happen, as you quite rightly said, Paul, we had a number of conversations with people. There's so many other people out there that have been a part of Pole to Pole and helping me make Pole to Pole come to reality. It's not just me and Julie. And it's tough. I always say to people say, how do I become an adventurer? Like, first get used to rejection, because you will be constantly rejected. And it's weird, because for the whole career that when I first started doing electric vehicle expeditions, I was told by the industry, give up. Nobody's interested. It's not going to work. Cars can't do it. And the only people that got behind it was Nissan. They saw what it was about. They saw something in me. And that's the only thing I can think of. They saw something in me and thought, this guy's got something. And we went on to do lots of stuff. But still, even during Pole to Pole, I had a lot of people say, not possible, not going to happen. Give up. Don't try it. We're not interested. Our vehicles aren't capable. We're not interested in putting our vehicle through that, etc. So it is constant rejection, but you've got to you've just got to stay true to what your passion is. What I always believe in is I know that this was something that needed to happen. I know this is the best way to dispel all those myths. And I wasn't going to give up on that. I have huge amounts of patience. Lots and lots of patience. And when you live in the world of social media, you get used to criticism and you take that on board and you kind of go, well, what can I do differently? And that's what I think I've learned through Pole to Pole is how to do things differently and how not to take rejection as a negative, take it as a positive and think, how can I make them say yes, not no?
Brilliant. Julie, tell us, you know, that, I mean, like an ultimatum, how do you motivate him? Because obviously he's the driving force behind the vision. You're intrinsically involved in the executions, clear. But, you know, how have you done that?
It was difficult, but I think at the time you were in and out of work. I was focused on work. I was focused on paying the bills, focused on my job at the time. And I knew this was kind of happening in the background. And I think Chris never really settled on any one job because he had this burning desire to do something. And I feel there's nothing worse than not letting your partner continue with a vision and a passion that's so big and can make a difference. So I supported him in that, you know, even though despite me working full time and having a very stressful job and paying the bills, I knew the importance of it at the time. But like I say, there was a ultimatum him in terms of, it was a long time he was working on this, and you do kind of question yourself, at what point do you foresee this not continuing anymore? So yeah, I think it's all about, if it was, I always feel things are meant to happen. I think when that magic moment happened, when we got the go-ahead that is going, I think so many stars aligned for us. It was being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people and the right conversations, people with the right vision, the right ethos, the right values, and all that coming together just made it happen. And I just feel like in life, if things are meant to be, it's meant to be. And I'm kind of glad that I persevered for that 6 years, and it obviously worked and it paid off. And yeah, and I just think it's too important not to, but I think, yeah, maybe beyond that 6 year mark, I think we were really at that cusp, weren't we, Chris, when I said, look, yeah, 6 months, and I think we should call it. And I think when you got that thumbs up, that was within that 6 months period. So yeah.
And if you look at what we did, if you look at what we did, I mean, to put it into frame it for people, so we drove from pole to pole, but that's basically 17,000 miles, which actually ended up being just under 23,000 miles in the end. 14 countries, traveling from the Northern Canadian Arctic through Canada, North America, Central America, South America, into Antarctica to the South Pole. That's bold, and that takes a lot of financing. That takes a lot of support. Antarctica is the most expensive place on the planet to go. So it takes a lot. And if you think during that time we were talking, Paul, we were in the middle and coming out of the pandemic and an economic crisis. So to make that happen, I mean, the resilience of this individual beside me, she is incredible, and always will be a huge, huge inspiration to me in my life. She doesn't believe it, and that's the amazing thing about her. She's just such a wonderful soul.
No, but likewise. Aww. Likewise, he's just as incredible, honestly. I think that's what makes us such a strong couple. I think in order to do something like this, you have to be strong. You have to, because otherwise it just wouldn't work. So yeah, we're a good team, aren't we?
We are.
You really are. And actually, it's really nice to hear you say it out loud and to each other's faces and behind each other's backs. And that's the proof, right? If you speak of each other to one another's faces as you would behind the back, then it's solid. And actually, I first met you, Chris, really, as part of the EV rally, the one that we did as COP26 around Scotland and so on and so on and so on. Yeah. And every single year, we try to prove the rally in the same way that you, in a minor way compared to what you've done. But it's still about taking vehicles out of their normal comfort zones and pushing them to their limit. But I can absolutely understand why those knockbacks happened. And you know, now that I'm privileged to be part of the rally behind the scenes, something I'm trying so hard to do is to continue to push the boundary, but without accidentally falling foul of anything that may go wrong, may play to the hand of the naysayers and the doubt fuelers. And just wondered how you kind of coped with that with Nissan. You must have had to have some quite sort of crisis conversations where, yes, they believe in you. Yes, they've adapted the vehicle. Yes, it's never been done and it's definitely worth a punt. But what were those parameters that they set for you in terms of reporting risk? When do you pull the plug? Were there any moments where you just thought, we've stuffed it, this can't go on?
I mean, it's a very interesting relationship we have with Nissan. So these guys have been amazing. So to frame it, because a lot of people do think that this is a Nissan expedition. So what happened was Nissan came on board as a partner, which was great. And they supported it. They gave us a vehicle. They gave us a sponsorship and some of the sponsorship that we needed. And we kind of went and they were like, this is your expedition. Do what you do best and just go get on with it. So they were there. The engineering team were there to support us with technical advice and everything. But we appointed Arctic Trucks. We planned the route. We planned all the logistics. Arctic Trucks planned the route in the Arctic and Antarctica with us. That's where their specialism comes into place. But Nissan really, they embodied their dare to do spirit. It was kind of like, we trust that you guys have this in hand, but we just need to have something that says, if the reality is, you know, we could have died, we could have fallen through the ice and died. One of us could have died. We could have been in an accident in South America that maybe injured somebody. We had those kind of crisis comm situations kind of in place to protect everybody. or to basically to send that information out properly. But outside of that, Nissan were just like, just go and do what you do. We have confidence in you, which is really amazing to have.
Huge credit.
You did say.
I was just saying, like, a massive shout out to Nissan, because they were the only manufacturer that really supported us fully, whereas other manufacturers didn't. So it just goes to show their confidence in their vehicles, the confidence in their vehicles in the harshest environments in the world. And, you know, because it's never been done before, you know. And, you know, I had doubts, I had concerns, and the, you know, there's so many things going around in my head. So I remember saying to you, Chris, you know, well, do you think it will survive? Do you think the Aria will work? Or do you think, you know, will the electronics work or what? And I think you were really confident that you have to right? When you do something like this, no doubts. But, you know, but like I say, massive credit to Nissan, because they're the only ones that could truly see the vision of what we want to achieve and the importance of it as well. Like I say, whereas no manufacturer maybe had that confidence or wouldn't support such a bold idea. So yeah, massive shout out to them.
Do you know the word that neither of you have used yet is fear? You were just talking about falling through the ice and you might die and you might kill someone, and neither of you have said the word fear yet. And I think, you know, that's part of your thing. And I just cannot help but think, what were you like as kids, guys? Were you just this sort of crazy? I mean, those of you who know us know that we're all friends, and I did get sent a very wonderful photo last night, and we were teasing each other just as we came on, and people who are watching can see it on my podcast recording now. So this is Chris on the back of Scott Edie's motorbike. He is grinning like a teenager who got picked up from the secondary school playground by the cool kid on the back of a motorbike. Well done, Scott. But it just looking at your face and zooming in on that smile just made me realize you've probably always been like this. What can I do? What's the next big adventure? I don't want a 9-to-5. And Julie, perhaps that's the same for you. I want to hear it all. Tell me more.
I'm just going to say, Scott is an absolute legend. I love him. He's such a great guy within the industry, but also just a lovely person to spend time with. That was, we had an idea to drive from, I went from Aberdeen down to his home, picked him up, and we drove all the way to Berlin for the Berlin Formula E. In an Audi e-tron, and then we drove back again. And that was at the F Formula E. They had a Harley Davidson stand, so he was taking his picture, and I was like, "Ah, oh, wait! I want to get in on it." And I just gave him a big hug. Lovely, such a lovely guy.
Love Scott.
Yeah, but if you look, I've been asked this question before, and if I look back at my childhood, I honestly don't really think there's anything there that kind of pinpoints to what I'm doing today. And it's strange. I'd love to, people always say, I can't give a stereotypical answer of like, you know, I was an adventurous child. I mean, I guess I grew up in the forces. My dad was in the forces. We grew up in army camp. So I did go out and play in forests and do the usual kid things, playing on your bike, riding around thinking you're like Street Hawk. That might be too old a reference for some people. And things like this, but I wasn't an adventurous kind of camping, get out there kind of kid. So I lived and breathed football. So outside that, it was really when I met, and it all comes back to Julie. You know, when I met Julie, I actually passed my driving test at 29. I decided I need to get my license and start driving her rather than her driving me everywhere. And she took me traveling around the world. On a year and a half, we went and did the whole backpacking gap year thing. So it's thanks to her that I am as adventurous as what I am today.
Yeah. I knew it. I called it. I knew it. I knew it was Julie that did all of this for you. Okay, cool. Go, Julie. Tell me about you then, Julie.
Yeah, I think I am such a different person today than I was, say, 2 years ago. And Chris, you could vouch for that, couldn't you? I mean, I was the shy girl who would never get up in front of a crowd and speak to people, who hated public speaking, who would never do this type of thing, even be on a podcast. I was shy and I was not very confident at all. And I've changed so much. And I think even as a child, I was always that shy girl and quiet girl and always kind of conformed. And I think the adventure side, I think I've always had the desire for travel. I think that's where we did the whole 1 year and a half year gap year thing. So the traveling thing has always been within me. So when Chris talked about doing these long distance adventures with the Mongol Rally and the pole to pole, what captured me was the travel element and meeting different people and cultures. That's the bit that kind of struck me or enticed me into the whole thing, but obviously not realizing all the challenges that went ahead or the extent of the challenge that came ahead. But yeah, I think I've just, one thing I've learned is that when you truly have a passion for something, your full personality is revealed, your full personality comes out, and you effortlessly have a voice and you effortlessly want to share those things that you've learned. And if you can make a difference, then that's the key factor. And I feel the ventures that Chris has brought me along on has given me that oomph and that change in personality. And I absolutely love it. And Chris says I've inspired him to do what he does. And you've definitely inspired me to be the person who I am now. And hopefully I am for the better. So yeah, I've changed massively from what I am now to just even as short a time as a couple of years ago, for sure.
Do you know what, Julie? I can see this. So what perhaps people don't remember is when Chris, it was, I think John and Chris and I spoke about a year ago or so, just over a year ago. And Chris, you did say that Julie was the one that opened your eyes to adventure, because I was expecting the Boy Scout, you know messing around in sheds and all of that sort of stuff, but no, I mean, you equivocally straight away said no, it was Julie opened my eyes. But the whole going on the backpacking thing and all that kind of stuff, and what it seems is that, Julie, this was always in you, that this person that we see before us was always there.
Yeah, yeah.
What? I want to say what went wrong somewhere. what kind of went over the top and pushed this wonderful woman? Sorry, Chris, it's not all about you, you know that. but this wonderful woman, that, because I've seen, so we first met Fully Charged in 2020 or 20, it was when the rules were around. It was 2021, yeah. I think, when we first met, Julie, and you were exactly as you described, very quiet, lovely, absolutely lovely, very quiet, quite shy, not
behind the scenes,
this confident person that we see before.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious. I know what's brought you out. What put you there in the first place? How did you?
I think I just didn't have that desire and that passion to be who I am today. I never found that passion in life. I never had something that I felt so strong about that I had to talk about and share. So I think as soon as you find that passion, which we both are, like I said, it just effortlessly comes out. And that's what I've learned about myself. And I think that goes for everyone. If you're passionate about something, it's easy, isn't it? It's and it comes. Yeah. So I think Chris has definitely inspired me to be passionate about electric vehicles and understand why they're so important, why we have to continue debunking those myths, why we're on this crusade of shutting up the naysayers out there, and to just showcase just how capable and exciting electric vehicles are and why they're important for our future and for the future generation as well, and how best way to captivate it than do something as bold as pole to pole. And, you know, all that together, I mean, how can you not get excited about it? How can you not get passionate about it? And I think that's where the trigger point came. So again, thank you to Chris for making me who I am today.
It's almost like the perfect combination of two people that bring out the very, very best in each other.
Yeah.
100%.
Kind of a lovely story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredibly moving. I'm sat here like, please don't ask me a question. I'm going to be loving at this point. But seeing as it's 2024 and it takes you a fair while to plan these mega adventures, where are you going in 2029?
Great question. Where am I going? I think that's the difficult thing we've got. I mean, once you've done something that's so bold as this, and it's kind of it's really the ultimate overland adventure that that's never been attempted. So it's kind of, it's the ultimate adventure. What happens next? And I think for the short term, we're looking at what's happening in 2024. We're still trying to adjust to being back in home life, literally. And what happens in 2025? I think we've said we would love to see what we can do to give back. That's the most important thing, is we've been supported. As we always say, there's kindness, there's generosity through all of our expeditions, Mungo Rally, Pole to Pole, everything. Whenever we needed some support, we needed some help, there's always been somebody there who opened their door, gave us a bed, gave us a shower, gave us a plug point, whatever it was. There's always been somebody there. And we think now we have this platform. We have this voice. We can advocate for electric vehicles. Yes, we can advocate for infrastructure and accelerating the transition. But also, how can we use that platform to do good and give back to people that are wanting to do things but don't necessarily have that ability or that platform or that voice? So how can we support people around the world, here in the UK, whatever? How can we do something that gives back to those people?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely. And you already are. It's a measure of, you don't know what your impact's been. You don't know how many people you've inspired along the way. And doing something incredible like this has huge dopamine hits, huge ego kicks, huge ability to feel incredible things. Of course, there's been the hardship along the way. When those things end, we've all had that great day where you just on cloud nine, and just the next day, let alone the length of time your adventure was, the next day when the emails come and the bills come and family want to see you and it's just sort of the normality of life ensues again. Not saying that's a bad thing, but that hit, does that amplify the bigger the adventure, the longer the period of time, and then the sort of what I would call the shadow, the almost hangover of the adventure? What's that come down like for you? How do you cope?
How do you cope, Julie?
Yeah, it's a bit weird. It's a bit surreal. It's a bit, sometimes we sit down, we think, have we actually been to the pole? Were we there? We did, by the way. It's not what we did in, but when you get back to everyday life, you settle in so quick. You know, you've got the letters to open, you've got the bills to pay, you've got the admin, you know, all daily life, like, it's really, and I think we're without Sunrisa at the moment, or Nissan Ariya, and I feel like we're missing a very important part of us, and we're missing her greatly, massively, aren't we? So it's taken a bit of adjustment, shall we say, and I think we're not quite there yet, because I think once we've planned our 2024 and 2025 and beyond, I think we'll have a bit more clarity. But I think, as Chris says, I think giving back, continuing our advocacy, continuing sharing our story, continuing to inspire, and continue adventuring as well. So as soon as we get Sunrisa back in the UK, we'll be out and about.
I've got this great vision that because you miss being out in the wilderness so much, the reason Chris has got a virtual background is he's actually sat in the little tent in his bedroom just because he feels very much like he needs to.
She knows. You caught me out.
I know how it feels. So, Chris, how about you? How have you coped being back?
Badly. It's strange because the amount of times we sat there and your laptop, you're doing your compare the market or whatever it be to get your insurance sorted out for your car and whatever, and you just look and go, God, I wish I could be back on the road. It's really strange. We've said that to each other so many times, and it's really strange because, as Julie said, it's the euphoria of doing what we've done is great, but there's always that element of kind of going, we've got to just carry on now. And how do we do that? And it's like, as Julie said, we sometimes don't appreciate that we've been to the pole. We've driven that distance. We've done this amazing thing. And we don't tell each other often enough that what we did was bloody amazing. We just get on with day-to-day life. And I think it's been really difficult for me because my brain is already thinking about what is that next thing? What can we do? What can we do? Can we do this? Can we do that? Can we do that? But we really then have to focus on, we need to get our life in order, and we need to get the daily bills done. We need to get the daily stuff done. which is the boring, mundane things of everybody's life. We still have those. And I think my brain doesn't want to focus on them. And that's, I think, the problem I have of adjusting is my brain wants to be thinking about when we get some visa back or what can we do next and what's happening. So it's a difficult thing for me. I'm finding it very difficult at the moment.
You just need another adventure, Chris.
I think that's the problem. If thinking about an adventure is stopping me from kind of getting back into normality first, accepting what we've done and appreciating what we've done, then be able to move on.
Do you know what? Forgive me. I've just thought of something. My son wrote this poem. It's his first ever poem, and I wouldn't normally bring this sort of thing to this, but just listen to this because I. oh wow, it's so no, but the check this out, guys. Right, listen, it's called Lost in Thought, and it says, this was written Monday. It says, "My mind is filled with mist and fog, forever getting lost in thought. A battle to stay present, forever being fought. I get lost in the memories, lost in the future. But the present is a stranger, always just passing by." And I'm like, this is this.
Yeah.
That's me.
That's us. That's 100%. Spot on.
It's so, wow. And do you know what? It's funny because I have similar thoughts when I've journeyed through life in different moments and we get caught up in our history. We get caught up in our future. But actually, the present is the present, and it's the gift. It's enjoying that moment. And Chris, do you know what? I feel for you because I know how hard it must be just to... And I thank everything that should be thanked for you and Julie being together because you have each other, right? To give you grounding, to give you the love that you need, to give you the assurance that it's okay... and you'll be okay. What can the new normal look like? Because we've talked about giving back. Well, is giving back? You've already done quite a lot of that in the sense of WWF has been something that's been really important to you guys throughout your existence, and giving back. You've given us one of the most brilliant stories that I was walking past a Nissan dealership in Box, which is in Wiltshire, which is I've just been called on WWF as from
not the World Wrestling Federation.
No,
Wildlife Fund.
World Wildlife Fund. Yes, yeah. Chris rolling around on the floor with The Rock.
Wrestling is so important for my global cause.
So, I walking past the dealership in Box, this Nissan dealership, really tiny little dealership. I said, "Oh, do you know about the Pole to Pole Explorer? That vehicle is currently going from the North Pole to the South Pole." But no, I'm like, "Oh man, you need to tell your customers. You need to tell everybody. It's just like, And so it's all cool. You've given us a lot. I feel. I want to give you something. Look, people are listening to this, right? And you've got a living to earn, And Julie, I don't know, have you got a job now? Or is this your life still? No, that's it. It's all so
this,
you guys.
This is the.
You,
this
you
is
gotta,
a bit.
You got to work. How? Yeah. What? Well, what is it? I mean, because you can talk, you can consult, you can kind of. I mean, tell us what. How can people give back to you by getting something from you?
I guess you've just summed it up there. But first of all, can I just say that poem from your son was beautiful. Yeah. And that, I say, that does sum us up. Definitely I resonate with that a lot. And I love that. I really, really love it. So
and for his very first poem as well. Incredible.
I'll send it to you.
Amazing. Then. Thank you, because that's even that just gives me a little bit of thought and things to think about and things to think that yeah, it's normal what I'm going through. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing. In terms of what people can do to support us, I mean, there's so many people that do a lot of things already. You guys, EV Cafe, you know, you guys have done so much by sharing what we've done, sharing what we're about, and giving us the platforms, which is incredible. I mean, I think...
Thank you so much for that. You guys have been truly amazing. Honestly, yeah, just want to say a huge thanks for your support.
And I think for us, it's now that part of that normality. Where's that normality start? And that is where we look forward to 24/25, getting out there and telling our story. So if there are organizations out there that would like us to come in and share our story, share not even just the story of Pole to Pole, the story of, as you said, mentioned earlier on, determination, perseverance, and just the desire to make change and be good in the world, that's something we'd love to do. And if there is any organizations out there looking to make that transition to electric vehicles, we'd love to get in there and help support people and share, because we can talk, like a lot of people out there, we can talk about practical experience, practical demonstration. We've been EV owners for over a decade, pure EV household for over a decade. But when people say, you can't drive long distance, oh, but EVs don't work in the cold, that's what I've heard. We can tell people from actual practical experience that that's not true. Whereas a lot of other people can only tell people through thoughts or through opinions or what they've heard. We can say from practical experience that that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I can see so many opportunities for you guys to come and tell your story. And, you know, it would be lovely, because I don't think there's very few couples out there with a joint experience that can share in the way that you guys can. So listen, if you know, the Fleet News or BVRLA dinner and the SMMT and all of the dinners and things like that, guys, you need to be hitting up Chris and Julie, because this is a story like no other. And I think
there's plenty stories, that's for sure.
Well, that's it. And give us from the journey, give us that lowest point, because there must have been, you know, I know there was a couple of things that made it to Instagram, and there's the picture of the cuddle and things like that, and also the high point. And I'm guessing we've got a high point picture right behind us, but maybe a high point that wasn't either the beginning or the end, you know, because I'm sure that they were pretty tough, but or pretty high. But give us a sense of how that journey felt throughout the 9 months and 23,000 plus miles that you guys did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go on, you go first.
How do you choose?
Yeah, one each.
You know, there's like, yeah.
High and low, okay. One each.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing that stands out, I mean, we've said this many times, is that magical moment where we saw a polar bear in the wild. I think that was, I mean, it's hard to explain just how beautiful that moment was. And at that point, I mean, it was on the first day. We had reached the magnetic North Pole. We'd left the magnetic North Pole. And then we drove for, I don't know, a couple of hours. And then there it was. There was just the lone polar bear in the wild, just plodding along, doing its thing. And it was just amazing. Stunning. And we were so stressed at that time. There's so much pressure on us in that time. That whole north area, or that section, that phase was stressed. And that's where that photo came from, where Chris was looking a bit tired, I was by his side. It was crazy. So, but what that allowed us to do was just stop. Everybody stopped and paused for that 10 minutes or whatever, that we were just looking through binoculars at this beautiful lone polar bear, hoping, he was walking away from us, he wasn't walking towards us, so that's okay. But yeah, that's definitely a high, because there was no guarantee that we'd see one. It's kind of one of these strange things, because you want to see a polar bear, but you also realize they're very, very dangerous animals. And if they're hungry, they will come and charge towards you and eat you quite very quickly. So it's one of those strange moments because you want to see, but you also understand the danger. So, but we were far enough away that we could watch he or she in its natural environment, just doing its thing. So that's a definite high for me. Over to you, Chris.
Amazing.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I would say there's many, many, many low points in the expedition. I mean, we had a lot of married conversations through stressful situations, stressful drives. But I think I'm going to pick up on that point from the leaving from the Magnetic North, because that, as Jay said, was a stress. That was a real low point for us, because imagine we've built up 6 years of our life to get to this point. We're getting up into the Arctic, and to frame it for people, we're way, way north. We're up in the Nunavut region, just south of Prince of Wales Island. We're 220 miles into the Arctic Ocean. We're driving on, for the last 220 miles, we've driven on the ocean, frozen ocean, and many, many challenges. And we get the news from Iceland base camp operations, from Arctic trucks, to say the ice road, which is still 1,700 kilometers or so away from you, is melting. The temperatures in that region are getting so high that the ice road is starting to melt. It's going to close 10 days early. Which means you have 4 days to take out of your schedule. So what's supposed to be a lovely time for us and a lovely experience outside of the expedition became a mad stress, mad rush. So we literally went to the Mag Pole, literally smiled for the camera, took a couple of videos with our videographer, and it was like, literally, hurry up, let's just get this done. We need to go, we need to go, we need to go. And we didn't have 4 days to take out of our schedule. And that was really, for me, was a low point for two reasons. Low point because it wasn't meant to be like that. I was so disappointed that we weren't getting the opportunity to have that experience, right? We're still humans. We're still, you know, we want that. We want that experience. We want to have that lovely moment together. And we just didn't get it in that sense. But also it was just as that picture demonstrates, I was exhausted. I was at my lowest point. I was broken. And I have, a lot of my friends will testify that I can drive till the cows come home. I have the ability, insatiable appetite to drive long hours, long distances, sleep deprivation. I can cover all this. But in that moment, 10 plus days of just sleep deprivation, not things not going right, I was broken. We stopped to charge the car, and I would never not be the one who took control of charging the car. I ignored the car. And I walked off and I just went to get some sleep and just left the car to somebody else to deal with, because I was just dead. And I was like really thinking, can we make this? Can we go on? And
this was the
luckily,
beginning of the expedition as well.
No, yeah. So early what I'm on. Thinking.
Yeah, so early and luckily, on, you know, it could have ended before it started. Yeah. So,
and that's where that picture comes from. It's kind of me just sitting down and putting my head on Julie's shoulders and she's saying, I've got you. We'll be all right.
Wow. Come on, guys. This is supposed to be fun.
I know. This is we asked the right questions and got the right answers, that's for sure. What I thought you were going to say, the low point was when you got to the South Pole, because it's over. That everything's, you've achieved what you wanted to achieve, and obviously you've got what you're doing now to come, but you're leaving, you're packing up, the cameras are turning off.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was the start, the sort of, and I wrote in the chat here, Paul and I talked throughout, number one, great pun on we paused for the polar bear, Paul. And the second thing was that I feel like you guys were robbed. That first, right, let's go, let's do it, that moment was stolen from you by and anyone who's seen Ice Road Truckers, it is the best part of that show when they say the road is closing. And it just, I just cannot even fathom. I'm just wide-eyed listening to you all. Thank you so much.
And like I say, there's so many occasions, so many highs, so many lows. And, you know, we could be here all day chatting. But, yeah, it's that's why I'm saying just take your pick. There's so many to choose from.
I'll just add to that point, Sarah. I'll pick up on Sarah's point there about the South Pole. Is it wasn't over for us anyway, because what people probably don't realize is when we finished at the South Pole, we had to turn around and drive back to the base camp. So we had to turn around and drive 788 miles back to the base camp. So our brains never stopped. So that moment of where it was going, we're at the pole, yay! Right. Okay. Yeah. Right. We need to think about how we need to think about the going back. So we did take 2 days out at the pole, and then we had to go back. So it's the expedition was never over when it was over for people visually. So we had to drive to the magnetic North Pole, etc.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, I must admit, the bit that surprises me most there is that the one of the toughest bits was the beginning, and I mean, it's funny. I'm gonna ridiculously relate to your experience, okay? Because my experience is like down here, and yours is up there. But
not at all.
Everything's relative. No, it is right. Probably. So we do the Green Fleet Rally. We do the Green Fleet Rally. You know the Green Fleet Rally. In fact, that year where we sort of travelled all the way through and Land's End to John O'Groats, or the other way around. And there's some amazing sights along the way. And I remember standing under the Angel of the North and, you know, kind of driving through a valley and da 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 da. And almost the whole time, because in my role in that rally, I'm videographer. I'm doing some of the videography with my phone, selfie stick, ovs. but thinking about where are we going to stop? Have I got enough charge? Can I get there? Can I do this? Can I do that? Somebody's there. What are they, somebody's not going to be there on time. Where have they gone? Who's? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And your head is too full to just stop and go, wow, look at what I've achieved. Look at what I see in front of me. Look at, and thank goodness for that polar bear.
Mm.
Yeah, thank goodness for that polar bear, because it just went, stop, guys, just take this moment.
Yeah, we had another moment. It was at the halfway point in Quito, in Ecuador, remember, Chris, where I got quite emotional because we're at the halfway point. It's a huge milestone for us to even get to where we were, walking around the capital of Quito. And it was just amazing. And the architecture, the buildings, and just have one of those tiny moments where we actually took stock of where we were and appreciated it. And I got quite emotional and I started crying. And Chris was there and I was like, Chris, we're in Quito. Look how amazing this place is. Just appreciate where you are. And Chris was saying, I want to, but I can't. My head's like thinking about where's the next charge? You know, is it going to work? Where are we going? What's the terrain like? What's the weather like? His brain would never stop. And we were like that throughout the whole expedition. And, you know, you got a sample of that through when you did it, Paul. But yeah, that was like that times 100
throughout the whole expedition. I get it.
Yeah. Because
to do that for 9 months, I can't do it for 9 days.
It's intense. It's intense.
And seriously, if you add to that, that we had the only support team that we had or support we had was in the Arctic and Antarctica. Everything else we were unsupported. It was just Julie and I on our own. But we're also running a business. So you have your accounts, you have your financial results, you've got all this stuff to go. We're running all of our social media. We have nobody behind our social media. So we're having to create all the social media posts, reply to all the comments. We're having to respond to all the media requests, all the interview requests, and schedule all those interview requests. We are literally doing absolutely everything on our own, as well as having to think about everything. So anytime something went wrong or something, plans had to change, I had to remap an entire strategy in that country or that region or that section on top of everything else that we were going through. So, yeah, it's a challenge.
And this is why you can never go back. This is why I asked you about how it feels to come back, because you everything's a benchmark, like the next step, the next step, the next step. You can't go back to a more, and just everybody's seen Long Way Up, Long Way Down, Long Way Round. We've seen all three of those. And I know the motorcycle instructor helped me to learn to ride myself. And he was telling me the truth behind it about how many people really do support them. They're incredible presenters, of course, but they weren't doing their own social media. They weren't remapping their strategic route. You did all of that.
And we did
it. I know we're running towards the end of our time. I know that. But one thing I was just desperate to tell you is there's pictures behind Chris's head for those who are watching rather than listening. And there's a flag in the snow. And it just made me think, like, say in some dystopian future where EVs don't work and don't exist, do you think anybody will ever look back like they did with landing on the moon and say, it was a hoax. It never happened. That image was AI. And we know it did because we saw your blood, sweat, literal tears of laughter and sadness all the way. And I for one, am humbled by your story. And I'm inspired by your next ambition because I imagine if you had money behind you to do what you just did, but with all the production crews. And why are we watching the grand tour? We should be watching you. In fact, let's get the grand tour involved.
Yeah.
Well, the key thing for me is I think one of the things, even if we had all that support behind us, but without that, we're still able to deliver. And the Long Way Up is, people know, I've spoken to Paul about it as well, huge inspiration. Long Way Round was a huge inspiration in my life. But we delivered charging infrastructures. The whole of one of our legacy projects was a whole through South America. We put chargers in the ground with NLXway. So now there's a whole charging infrastructure network through Pan American Highway. Peru had a couple of chargers in the whole country. It now has a border-to-border AC and DC charging network because of pole-to-pole, and they're going to continue to grow. So if we had so much behind us, we could do so much good in this world, and not just about filming an expedition and doing a cool adventure, but making sure the adventure has purpose. We will never do an adventure just for the sake of doing it. We need to deliver purpose. We need to give it purpose. So.
Give us a quick rundown of the things that have been legacy, because I think it's really important for people to recognize this point. So we've heard a bit about the Peru bit and just generally working with that charge point company whose name was
NLXway.
NLXway. Right, cool. Yeah, so working with those guys, seeing that all happen, what else was left as legacy as a result of the trip?
I guess, I mean, that's the key thing. But I was going to say, sorry, I'm depending on you, Julie. I'll let you go.
No, I was just saying, like, obviously the NLXway was fundamental, and we're going to continue to work with them and continue that legacy. And we want to also look at working with the science bases in Antarctica and look at electrifying some of their vehicles that they use in their bases as well, because we've proved that an EV can work happily in Antarctica. If you think about, well, when we were out there, we understood a little bit about their uses for vehicles and the kind of shorter distances that they cover. So they don't go long distances, a very few vehicles. So we're kind of hoping to progress on that and work with the science bases to kind of trial some electrified vehicles out there to eventually maybe electrify a lot of the fleet out there. So that's really exciting as well. And then just continue to work with initiatives and projects out there. But the other thing that we also took from it was we visited a lot of projects, not as many as we wanted, but for example, we visited a mine in Canada, and we learned about the electrification of their fleets of vehicles deep underground in the mine. I mean, we had no idea this was even possible or even existed, but it's kind of visiting these establishments or these organizations, learning from them and sharing those stories and sharing the good that people are doing as well. So it's kind of us leaving our mark, but also sharing the good of other people that are doing amazing things in this world to help, fight this climate emergency that we're having.
And well, I know we're running short of time. I'll just add one very quick one, which is about education and kids, because part of this as well, we worked with Newsomatic to create an expedition flag design competition. And we had kids from all over the world sending their designs. And Grace from New Long Island basically won the competition event as well. But what we'd love to do is see how we can get in there and continue that education for kids and get into schools and start, just inspiring them with our story and showing kids that there's hope out there, that us adults are trying to do something. There is hope, but also that there is cool, fun opportunities in life. You've just got to have that. You've just got to not listen to the stereotypes and just go for it and just believe in your passion.
It's the thing that I'm taking away from all of this, and I've got it circled here, is passion. Passion, Chris, that was ironically unlocked in you by your wife, who didn't have that passion. Julie, you at that time, just your passion perhaps was for travel, and that unlocked Chris. And in turn, that's come back to you and unlocked a passion in you. It just seems, I think the word is serendipitous. I'm not very, very good at English, but is that right, Tess? You know whether that's the right word or not.
Oh, no, I'm terrified to use words like that now after I got it wrong last time and called you something wrong on the news.
I think it is. Yeah. I think there's irony and serendipity in all of that. And,
definitely.
You know, these... What you've achieved, I don't know if it goes down as a Guinness World Record, does it? Is it a Guinness World Record? It's not, is it? Because it
can't be verified.
But that is ridiculous. Who needs Guinness to know that this was a bloody amazing thing?
That's what I was going to say.
And it just, you've
bathtub full of baked beans. Doesn't make it good.
I know.
Yeah, you got a Guinness World Record for driving 180 miles and didn't get one for driving 23,300 and whatever it was. Big credit though to Nissan, who provided the vehicle and the Nissan Ariya for achieving what it achieved in being able to drive at both the North South Pole and also through all of those deserts. Definitely. You know, the Atacama Desert, is that the driest desert in the world, isn't it? Something like that. Yeah. And you know, all of the various spots along the way. It's been amazing.
And the car was incredible as well. I mean, just the reliability, the durability, and, you know, the well-built cars. So it's a massive advert for EVs out there that, you know, if it can traverse through the harshest environments of the world, then it's a big tick for electric vehicles. And that's what we're proud of. Yeah. And that's what we want to shout about and showcase. And thanks to all our other partners and sponsors as well, because without these guys, you know, NLX Way, Iridium, BF Goodrich, Thule, Coral Eyewear, Shackleton, the lot, all of you, EV Cafe, everybody, honestly, I know that we've done a lot ourselves, but at the end of the day, without it's not possible. And all our followers and GoFundMe supporters and everything, massive thank you, because it is collectively, you know, a team effort.
Mm.
You have done a lot, and when you do more next time, we'll all be behind you again. And I think what people need to hear is, don't be afraid. If we all lean in and all try to dispel these myths, we will achieve. And your legacy is so impressive, both in the hardware that you've installed and the sort of passion, as you say, Paul, that you've inspired in everybody. I know that this will be a historic moment, and I, for one, feel very honoured to call you friends. Thank you for being on our show today.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you so much, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to call you guys friends as well. And
I know.
Hopefully we'll catch up very soon at an event. Looking forward to that, and just giving everybody a great big hug, because as Julie said, followers, friends, you guys have played just as crucial a role in this as well. And we just can't thank everybody in the world that sent us messages of support and encouragement along the way, because you all have been amazing and an inspiration to us.
Well, you know, I know that we, over the time that you were on your journey, exchanged the odd message. I was always amazed. And you even came on the EV Cafe whilst on the tour. I think you were in South America. It was slightly less arduous part.
Probably not a good idea, because I was so tired and I just garbled rubbish.
It's very early in the morning, I remember.
That was right. Yeah. And I think you were asleep, Julie. Perhaps being woken up. But... We've felt so privileged and inspired. You've definitely inspired us, and will continue to go on and inspire many others through this story. This is a story that needs to be told in a book or a film, or, you know, just kind of brought together. It was great to see the BBC report at the end, you know, just kind of capturing lots of the journey. And I thought, wow, that I thought that would have been a big smile moment for you guys, just to see that captured, and particularly by the BBC. It's nice that they celebrated your story with more than just a passing mention.
Absolutely.
It's been amazing. Listen, so if you want to kind of pick up the whole journey, everybody, the story at the beginning, just talking to Chris in our podcast, it's March the 15th was the day it was released. Get back and have a look at that. But this has been just brilliant, and it feels like we've got another 2 hours in us at least. But it's been really great to get a snapshot, a tiny taste. And I think it's good that everybody gets a tiny taste, because now they have to book you to come and speak at their events. Yes. As a couple.
To hear more.
And hear yes. more, or to reach out to say, can we write a book with you? Or to reach out and say, can we create a documentary? Because this is the story that needs to be told. It is a unique and inspiring and challenging and encouraging story, a story of passion, of perseverance, of resilience, the determination yes. with some incredible yes. highs and some yes. really challenging lows.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I just, definitely. When you painted that picture yeah. of just your always head, I felt it in my tiny little way in comparison to those 9 months of feeling that. Guys, really well done. Really yeah, bloody well
you.
Done.
Thank you so much.
I mean, yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but
of course.
If anyone's out there that's listening that is interested, I mean, we got contacted by an individual who has basically, we have an opportunity to put a children's book together on the Portable story. And he's already got a book and it's beautiful. And yeah, it's something that I'm really passionate about. And I think it's so important, but all boils down to cash and finance, etc. So if anybody's out there that's listening, who has a deep, enjoyed listening to this and maybe want to support, please do get in contact, because I think capturing these moments and sharing those stories, and especially to, you know, encouraging the younger generation, inspiring them is what we need to do. So the more we can do, the better. So sorry if I end this
no, podcast Julie, with a request. Love it.
But yeah, honestly, I mean, Chris, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've said it all. I mean, it's if there is people out there that would love to support that, we'd love to chat to you. There are so many opportunities. There are so many things that we can do. It just comes down to everything. It's come down to support. So if there is somebody out there,
cash, Chris, it comes willing, down yeah. to cold hard
okay.
cash.
Okay, cash. I'll say cash. I like to say
people with some big deep pockets, they can it afford is. It.
Yeah,
it is.
But a great way to be able to support something that basically goes into schools and inspires kids and gives kids an amazing story to listen to. We would be very, very grateful.
Yeah, cool. And it continues the giving back theme as well. You know, when we say we want to give back, and that's one of the ways. And it is sometimes in order to give back, you need that hard cash, as you say. So, yeah, so that's
cool. Well, we'll snip that little bit and we'll use that as well, just as a little appeal, because I think it's definitely worth it. Well, guys, listen, it's been a pleasure. There's not enough superlatives to kind of cover off how we felt, and I don't know. Normally I would encourage everybody to go and listen to another podcast after this, but I think everybody just needs to go and sit in a quiet room and a darkened room even, and consider your life. What have you done? Get on with something. Get off. No, I'm just kidding. But just take in this story and be encouraged and be inspired to do something with your passion, because there's some amazing things to do out there. So check out the links. There'll be links in the description. Head over to the Evie Cafe page after you've calmed down from the sort of highs and lows of this wonderful story. And let's look forward to the new normal for the lovely Ramses. Have a great day,
everybody.
Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Bye, guys. Nice one.